Good afternoon. This is the regular meeting of the Morro Bay Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. It is Tuesday, July 17th, 2018, and the time is 3:30. And we have a quorum, so I'll call this meeting to order. And we'll begin with a moment of silence. Thank you. Now please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any committee member announcements or presentations? Seeing none, we will move on to the public comment period. This is time set aside for members of the audience wishing to address the committee on business items, and you may do so at this time or during one of the agenda items. And seeing none, we'll move on to the consent calendar, approval of minutes for the May 15th, 2018 Citizens Oversight Finance Advisory Committee meeting. Are there any changes that need to be made? No? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
My motion.
Okay, John, a second?
I'll second.
Okay, second by David. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. Votes 5-0. And next item is a brief financial update by our finance director, Jennifer Calloway. Jennifer?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you all for coming. I have a couple things to touch on. We're in year-end process at this point, so our budget and accounting manager did a year-end training with all of the departments on making sure we get items accrued into the proper year, which was one of our findings from the last audit. And so far, it seems that was successful. We haven't had any issues at this point. So we are wrapping that in that process, and we'll be in that process through, August, September. The auditors are scheduled for October, so mid-October, I believe. So we're working towards that deadline. Also, the WIFIA loan application was submitted last week, at the end of the week. We were happy to receive a preliminary bond rating from S&P as part of that application package, and that was an A rating with a stable outlook. So we were very happy with that. Of course, it's preliminary, and it's based on whatever assumptions we had provided them, and assuming that those hold true, we expect that to be our final rating. So just wanted to update the committee on that. We're working on doing a budget brief document. I know that was part of the committee's charter in the past, was to come up with a community or citizen-friendly budget document. I have a few templates that I've used in the past, so I thought I'd get something started, and we'd bring that forward in August to get feedback from the committee as a starting point. And we can change that, after that discussion. But that's scheduled for the next meeting in August. Also, we have open office hours tomorrow from 12 to 5, Thursday from 8 to 12, and then next Thursday from 12 to 5 at City Hall. And that's for any resident. We can accommodate businesses as well that are interested in seeing what their potential rates would be if the 218 process is successful. So just wanted to get that out there. It's a walk-in, city manager, public works director, utilities manager, myself, and the project manager are all available to assist if people would like to come in. You can ask questions, or we can calculate your rates for you. City Hall.
In the conference room?
In the conference room. Yep, you can just come into City Hall, and the clerks up in front will direct you back.
Could you repeat the times and hours?
Sure. Tomorrow, the 18th, 12 to 5. Thursday the 19th, 8 to 12, and then Thursday the 26th, 12 to 5. We had two similar sessions over at the Visitor Center that were sponsored by the Chamber yesterday and today, where it was directed specifically for businesses and did have a few people come in. This was intended more for residents, but we can certainly work with businesses as well if they'd like to come. Also, not on your agenda, and I was looking for some feedback if you'd like this agendized for discussion or not. During the third quarter budget update with the council, there was direction that we amend the CFAC bylaws or resolution to include review of the annual performance, quarterly performance reports outside of just the Measure Q report. As a matter of practice, we've been bringing them to you, although today's after the fact, clearly, and there was direction that we do that. We bring those to you prior to them coming to council and to have that formalized. So unless there's a need to discuss that, we were just going to go ahead and do that. There's been a request to shorten the time frame for sitting on the committee as well, so we were going to do those two together. But if you'd like that agendized for August to discuss, we can do that as well. So any comments on...
I think that's fine, or you could add it to the annual work schedule so it's not part of the actual code. But as far as the change they made to the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee terms, how does that affect people who are seated on the committee now?
I think that I'd have to check on that, and I'll get back to you. I think you would stay at what your term was, and then it would be going forward, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Okay.
I'll get back. I'll email out the committee. I'll check with Dana and Scott and get back to you.
Okay.
And then lastly, at the next meeting, you'll have meeting minutes from the joint CFAC, PWAB, and WRFCAC meeting that was held on the 25th. So you can expect those to come in August as well. We just didn't get those on this agenda before we had to publish it. So other than that, I think I'm good.
Any questions for Jennifer?
Yes, two. I follow the WRFCAC thing pretty closely, and I was not aware of these sessions. Is it possible to post them on Nextdoor or someplace? Sounds like at least two of us weren't totally aware of.
Sure, we can. I don't have access to Nextdoor, but I'm sure somebody at City Hall does.
However, you could send a notice out.
They are on our website. There's a notice on the. But yeah, we'll try to get something on Facebook, and I'll go back and see what we can get out there.
Maybe everybody else daily or hourly goes in and checks the website to see what's different, but I don't.
Okay.
The other issue, a little more serious, I guess. I don't know what an A rating means. Maybe I should be on this committee. How does that compare to cities our size, Pismo, other? Because I don't know. Is that good? Is that not good? Somebody commented. I heard. Oh, that's not very good. Well, maybe for a city our size, that's really good. I don't know.
I don't know what other cities around here. I'm not sure what their ratings are. I haven't done research on that. I kind of expected to get maybe a triple B rating, given the fact that we don't currently have a rating. We haven't had a debt issued. I was pleasantly surprised by an A. It's certainly not the highest. You can go up to triple A, but it does. The definition is stable outlook, so that's a good thing. We had a lot of things working in our favor from the S&P standpoint, Standards and Poor. They were impressed with the amount of cash balance that we had. They were happy to see that there was a rate increase in the past. It indicated to them that there was, if you go a long period of time without a rate increase and then come forward and ask for a rating, and you haven't demonstrated willingness to increase rates, that's not as favorable from a bond perspective. So that worked in favor of the city. From the WIFIA perspective, an A rating is going to look good for us. Same with State Revolving Fund. So I was happy with that. I expected it to be maybe a triple B. So.
Well, I would like to congratulate you for getting that rating, because it is difficult for a city of Morro Bay size to get that rating. And again, I think triple B is considered investment grade. So anything above that, you're going to get a pretty good interest rate. And A is certainly a strong showing with a stable outlook. So I guess that double A rating that you talked about in the past is something that was just ancient history or something that you were never able to verify?
Yeah, and you know, I know we talked a little bit about it at the Blue Ribbon Commissions, and I could not find where that came from. So it's either very outdated. It definitely was not related to the water and sewer funds. And while we gave some broad information on the city as a whole, the rating is specific to the water and sewer funds because that's where the debt is going to be applied against. And that double A was not part of those. Looked a little bit in Harbor and looked all through the files and even spoke to Ms. Slayton, and she couldn't tell me exactly where to find it. So I think it even predated her.
Okay, so let's move on to item B2, and this is an action item. They're looking for a recommendation from the committee to the City Council for authorization for sole source purchase of a fire engine pumper from Pierce Manufacturing. And I'm going to turn this over to Matt Vieira.
Can I just correct something first? I'm sorry, I'm just going to make one correction. There was a little bit of confusion with the pricing, and the recommendation is to do a contract not to exceed $650,000. Need to amend that, and it will be amended when we go to council to $679,000. Double took our $28,000 discount, so we only get it once, unfortunately. So I just wanted to point that out. The funding still is to is proposed to come from the General Fund Emergency Reserve, so we don't have to do the financing. We could offset that and take some money from our Vehicle Equipment Replacement Fund as well. That has not been accrued for fire-specific purchases. It's been for police and our Public Works Department vehicles, so we would pay that back, but we don't want to fall too far below our target level, so that additional money I think we'd propose come from the Vehicle Replacement Fund. And then with that, Fire Marshal Matt and Engineer Travis, they worked on the committee, so I'll let them speak to the actual piece of equipment. The city attorney and I both reviewed this and were comfortable with it being a sole source based on the justifications, so we'll let them speak about their process, and then committee member Batante had some specific questions, and they'll go through and answer those for you.
Good afternoon, committee members. Again, my name is Matt Vieira, Fire Marshal, Morway Fire Department. I've recently been here just 11 months. I came from Atascadero Fire Department after 24 years. So I'm happy to be here in Morro Bay and happy to talk to you guys in person. I've heard a lot about you from Steve, Chief Knuckles, and so I'm glad to be here today. Again, with me is Travis Hosh. He's the expert. He's the engine maintenance guy for our department, and he knows the ins and outs, and he's been leading the committee on the purchase of these fire engines, so they've actually driven around to other stations and done some work on that. We're here today to talk about the sole source. Pierce has been a long-time manufacturer that's used in this county. Many agencies around the county use Pierce. I know in Atascadero, where I came from, we've been having Pierce engines since 95. We've had tremendous success with these engines. I understand there's other engines out there, numerous ones. One thing about the fire service, there might be 800 departments in the entire state, but it's still a small community. Chiefs talk and everybody talks on what's good and what's not good and what's successful and what's not successful. And I know in this county we've had great success with the Pierce fire engines, and that's why we're kind of leaning on that direction. Some of the manufacturers that we addressed and we actually talked to is Aaron's Fox, HME, Spartan, Westmart, and Seagrave. Some of them we talked in person and some of them we did internet. We do this due diligence just to make sure there isn't anything new or different out there that we're missing. So we spent some time doing that in mid-June and going through it. And then Travis and the committee did the same thing. We've seen Pierce make some advancements in their fire engines and their turning radiuses. One thing unique about Pierce for us is that they build the fire engine from ground up. So you decide on how big the fire engine is. Turning radius is really dependent on your community. I know where I came from over the hill, turning radius wasn't that big of a deal. We have big properties, wide driveways. Here in Morro Bay, it's very tight. So we can make that engine any size we want to turn in different cul-de-sacs and everything else that we need. And then the puck is a unique thing, too, as well. I have some of your questions that you guys asked. One of them was, is the pumper under the cab configuration exclusive to Pierce? And that's the puck. And that is, yes, that is exclusive to Pierce. Travis, do you have anything to input on that? Right there.
Yeah, the puck is, as Matt said, the pumper under cab is a Pierce exclusive option, and basically it is the leader in the industry right now for that, and that allows us several things. That allows us to have a shorter wheelbase engine with a lot more storage, so the puck engine actually has the most cubic foot of storage for the size of engine in the industry. And it also allows us to utilize the pump on a power takeoff unit, which I believe no other agency does at this point. Again, that's a Pierce exclusive thing. And so this allows, the main advantage of that is it allows the engine to be able to be driven and pumped at the same time, which most Type 1 engines cannot be. So in fact, our ladder truck is also a puck and has that option. So if we were trying to go down like the highway and put out a fire, our ladder truck can do that of all things, just because of the puck. And so, yeah, it is a Pierce exclusive option, and it's something that they've only had out for a few years, and we're finding a lot of departments are going with this for those advantages. So Cambria has one. San Luis City has two. I believe they're ordering a third. And I believe Five Cities Fire Authority will be ordering one in the future as well.
One of the other advantages is that the Paso Robles Service Center, or South Coast, has the service center up in Paso Robles. That is huge for us, and the resembles the next one we used to take down to Ontario, down in Los Angeles. So that's two guys in an engine in a truck driving 8 hours one direction and trying to get that done. Or sometimes, actually, I have spent the night in a hotel, wait for the engine the next day, and drive back. So that's a huge advantage of having those people up here locally. It saves time and money all the way across the board. There was another question about Paso Robles Service Center provides service for other manufacturers. At this time, I don't think they do. I haven't seen or talked to them about if they service any other type of engine. What's the process to obtain service from state OES-provided fire engines? That was one of the questions also, Travis.
Yeah, before we go there, Matt, I'm just going to add a little bit about the South Coast Service Center. And an advantage for us at South Coast is not only the immediate proximity, if you will. Normally, we would be going to areas, like Matt said, like Ontario or Modesto. And I believe the agency in Modesto that was certified to work on Pierce apparatus has lost their certification to do that. They haven't re-upped that. So not only is it close, but a lot of the times the guys, the people who are going to work on the engine from the office in South Coast will help us. So they'll bring it one way and we bring it the other way, or they'll arrange to pick it up while they're going to work on another unit. So that actually helps us out a lot. And just having them here and knowing these people has really been helpful as well. I think, Matt, I don't know if you addressed it or not, but I'm guessing that we've probably had our apparatus up there to their agency approximately 16 times in the last 3 years. That was one of the questions that was posed here. But I'm guessing they've been to our fire station to work on our apparatus somewhere in that same range. So getting it back and forth is a lot easier, or having them come out and work on it here is a lot simpler too. And then also, those guys have been great. One instance I had a radiator hose blow off an engine, and I was trying to find one around the county on a Sunday afternoon, 9 p.m. at night kind of thing. I'm able to call those guys, and they were willing to open up their shop and allow one of us to go up there and get a hose if we needed it. So having the service center here just saves us a lot of cost. It saves us a lot of time, and then knowing who the people are has also been beneficial. And it seems that one thing about fire engines, they're so diverse. They have so many different things going on in them. They pump water, they drive, they carry equipment. So it's not like your typical vehicle where you would go to an agency and they work on it. Most of the time we have to have somebody to work on the pump. We have to have somebody to work on the motor. These are all different people. South Coast eliminates that problem for us in that they're obtaining certifications for all of that. So it's really a one-stop shop, and if it's something that they aren't certified in, they bring an expert into their shop. So our apparatus doesn't usually have to go anywhere else besides there. Moving on to the question about the state OES, what we have to do for them, for the process to obtain service. If it's under $100, it's on us to maintain it. If the cost is over $100, we have to fill out a form that is their form. It's called a Form 161. And I would fill out that form with the request for repairs after I first get an estimate for the repairs. Then I have to send it into the state. They review it. It goes through a process where it's reviewed by the state fire inspector. I believe that's his title, but he basically is ensuring that the repairs are needed and going to be done correctly. Then I have to get approval for it, have the mechanic or agency that I'm using to repair it go ahead and do the repairs. Then I have to go ahead and submit it that it was completed. So it is quite a lengthy process, and it can take up to months to get some of the most simple things fixed.
Where are you taking it for service? Is it done? Do you have mobile service come in and repair it, or are you taking it to a service center out of county?
So that's a tough scenario based on that engine. Right now I have an older gentleman who's a retired fire mechanic, and he just works his own business, works out of his house basically. And he is certified with OES as one of their repair mechanic agencies that can work on it. However, anything that exceeds his capacity, we have to drive it somewhere. We have to find somebody that's listed on their list. In fact, we just picked up a new engine in February, I believe mm-hmm. it was, and it's been a nightmare trying to get it in service. It's been out of service for probably a good 6 to 8 weeks since we've received it, and one of those times it was in Bakersfield for over a month. I believe it was 6 weeks at a Gibbs Truck Center, which is one of their approved agencies to work on that. And I believe even while it was there, it had to have a couple of different agencies come in to deal with the different parts and pieces of the engine, if you will.
And continuing with the purchase of Pierce, every engine we have now at the fire station is a Pierce engine. This creates continuity for us. So you can jump into one engine or the other engine or the other engine, and it's going to be the same configuration. The bag's going to be in a certain spot. The rope bag's going to be in a certain spot. How the engine drives, all the control panels. And since we cross-staff, most stations our size have to cross-staff. So that means if there's a structure fire, they have to jump in one engine. If there's a commercial fire, they have to jump in the truck. If there's a veg fire, they have to jump in a different truck. So to have that continuity and the same across the board is a great asset for the fire department. It's just awesome. It makes it much easier and much easier for everybody to jump in and do the job.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any clarifying questions?
Well, I had another question I had that wasn't addressed. In the staff report, you mentioned that you went through a process where you reviewed products from five other manufacturers, and I wanted to know who those manufacturers were, and when did you do that review process?
I identified Aaron's Fox, HME, Spartan, Westmart, and Seagrave. And I mentioned that most of that was done by internet, and some of it was done where they came by the station and actually showed us their fire engine, and it actually was done phone calls. And we did that in the first part of June to the middle of June. And then after that, then we did the tour to the other stations that had Pierce engines and their configurations. So we tried to do it that way and talk to them. And like I said, it was to make sure that there wasn't anything new or different with the engines out there. Anything is improved, if there's any new items or anything that we're missing.
As far as the service question, what was the availability of service on these other manufacturers? And another question I have is, where is Seagrave manufactured now?
Seagrave, I believe, is manufactured back in Minnesota, but I'd have to double check that.
Okay, so none of these manufacturers have produced fire engines in the state.
There are a couple. I believe Spartan produces in the state, but one disadvantage of Spartan, I don't know if Matt had previously mentioned this and what he was talking about, is that with Pierce, they build from ground up. So they build the chassis, they build the box, they have the pump, everything is Pierce. With Spartan, they build the chassis, and a lot of other times they have somebody else come in to build the body and the box and put the pump on it. I believe Spartan's the only one I know of in the state. Mm-hmm. And that's that. Basically, Spartan and Aaron's Fox are our parent and child company of each other. So the OES engine we have is an Aaron Fox, and that's something that I was explaining we were dealing with. We have to go to these other agencies that aren't related to the company, like Gibbs International or some other, like Valley Power, that works on diesel motors to try and get serviced what we need serviced.
And this question is probably for Jen. I wanted to get some clarification on the financing through the General Fund Emergency Reserve. I wanted to know if there's any financing cost that's going to be paid for out of Measure Q funds to do that, or is it just a straight repayment? And if there is any financing cost, how does that compare with other financing options?
So my intention would be, and I think I mentioned in the staff report, if the committee concurs with the recommendation, we'd take this to the first meeting in August along with a resolution and stipulate the repayment terms in the resolution. I have not had all much opportunity to research if we're legally required to pay interest in this situation. If we were borrowing from like gas tax, we would have to. But my thought and my intention would be to draft the repayment terms that there would be a lower interest rate, but that would be the general fund's contribution towards the fire truck. So the Measure Q money would not pay an interest rate like that. And I think we could be creative with our language with that to make it clear that that's what the general fund would contribute, the 1% interest, essentially. And so that's how I'd draft the resolution.
I was curious. So we right now we have, it looks like, two other Pierce trucks. Is that right?
So right now we have a total of, give me a second to total it up in my head. We have four other Pierce apparatus.
Okay. So 5381, 5341, 5391.
The numbers of the Pierce apparatus that we currently have is 5391. That's the engine that we are hoping to replace. It's 24 mm-hmm. years old. 5351, which is our rescue unit, built in 2008. 5392, which is our first out Type 1 fire engine. That would be going into our reserve engine. That was built in 2008. 5351, the rescue, was built in 2009. And then our ladder truck, 5341, which was built in 2015.
So, okay. And roughly how much a year does the fire department spend on fire truck maintenance?
I think that's a number we'd have to get back to you on. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was wondering, so it sounds like, you know, maybe $3,000 a truck in just labor to get them to maintenance. Is that right?
It really depends, but here locally, probably far less.
Okay.
All right. Well, those costs are really incurred when we have to go to those destinations like Bakersfield and Modesto, and we have to provide a driver each way, and depending on the repair, like Matt said, a hotel, or pay for the mechanic to come retrieve it and take it back as well.
Yeah, well, what you're proposing sounds reasonable, but if we're worried about money, you know, the maintenance costs should probably be quantified somehow, at least to a certain level, and then you would then be able to say, okay, if we had this annual cost for the Pierce trucks, and if we had to figure on like $20,000 or $30,000 a year for a different truck, then you that would make your argument much more simple.
I don't have any questions.
Okay, then we'll go this direction to the left here.
I have one question that's sort of indirectly related, and excuse me if it's been addressed earlier. I know that we're compensated for staff time when our fire department is working wildfires for CAL FIRE, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Now, is there some the wear and tear on the apparatus if our apparatus is used? Is there a separate kind of reimbursement for just kind of general wear and tear on the vehicles, or is that on us?
On the OES, obviously that's a state-owned engine, so that's on the state. And if we go out of county, we get an hourly rate for whatever engine that we take. Okay. So, yes, there's an hourly rate incurred that we charge for and that we bill for when we go out to different fires. Locally, no, we won't, because that's more mutual aid.
Right.
But if we go out of county, like Thomas Fire or different agencies or the fire in Yosemite, yes, we'll be reimbursed hourly for those engines.
For the apparatus?
For the apparatus itself, and then the personnel get paid separately.
Thank you.
Sure.
Question for Jennifer. So the $679,000 as opposed to the $650,000, is that going to affect the annual amount coming from Measure Q? The staff report says $60,375.
The $60,000 was, I think it was $60,000 that was already adopted in the approved budget for 18-19.
Right, but as far as the future years, it's talking about $60,375 for the next 4 years.
So that we would include that in those future year budgets when we came forward for approval.
Right, but will the additional $29,000 increase that amount?
Yes, it would, actually. So they're working with the manufacturer still, so we do expect that number to come down. So this is a not-to-exceed amount as they're building the engine and making changes. When we have a final amount, we would kind of divide that evenly among the next 4 years and incorporate that amount into the budget. We'll probably, I think, try to keep it around that $60,000. So if we spread it among 5 years, we could amend the resolution or rescind it and do a new one, just so there's not a significant impact to Measure Q.
Okay. And then just to verify, and I think I've asked this before, the Bertha Schultz Trust, $275,000, is that going to bring that fund down to zero?
They received about $25,000, I believe, late spring from Bertha Schultz. So they get some money that comes in periodically. It's not regular or consistent from what I understand or have seen in the fund, but there will be some money in there. I don't have the exact balance with me, but I can send that out to the committee as well.
So if there's any kind of a cost overrun on this, can it come out of that money?
I would recommend that it would, yeah.
Okay. And this is for Fire Marshal Vieira. The fire engine you're going to purchase, you're expecting to get 20 years of service from it. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
20 years? Okay.
5391 currently is at 24-year service, the one that we're planning to replace.
Okay.
And just a side note, when we go back to Pierce and we sit down and we work the paperwork and we work the numbers with them, that number could fluctuate. We could save money. It's one of the advantages of building it from ground up, is that if something costs too much or we're going to get to that point where it's hitting that 679, we can reduce the cost by maybe we're not going to get the most comfortable seat. Maybe we're going to lower it down a little bit, or different handles or different upgrades we can change there at Pierce.
Okay.
So it's not like buying a Chevy or a Ford or a Dodge where it's just the flat rate. We can adjust that when we get back there.
Okay. And then last question. There was a fire truck purchased in 2014. Another one purchased in 2009. Maybe the folks here weren't here then, but I wonder if either of those was purchased through a sole source type of contract. And can you comment on that?
I was not around in 2009 here in Morro Bay when it was purchased, but I believe that engine was. And I know that the ladder truck that was purchased in 2014 was sole source as well.
Thank you. So now, are there any public comments on this issue? Okay. No? Okay. Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the committee for discussion.
Can I just clarify one
sure.
thing? Committee member Irwin, you had asked about the maintenance. This is going to bleed over a little bit into the next item, but the next item is the OpenGov platform. So Val was able to pull that up for you so that we can give you an answer. She can kind of sort through and filter through, and the budget for 17-18 was 11.5. I think she's getting there right now. Obviously, maintenance can vary from year to year, so it looked like it was anywhere from 40,000 to 5,000 over the five-year period, but she's pulling it up again, and she's sorting by fund, general fund, and Val, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're sorting by general fund and then going to vehicle repair and replacement and the fire department to kind of whittle down to what that cost was. So that's one of the advantages of this OpenGov portal. When it's available for the public, is you can kind of do these customized searches. And there's 5 years of history there. I guess it was 14,000 in 14-15, 10,000 in, I can't read that, 15-16, 6,000 in, was the actual in 15-16, and then 16-17 was 50,000, 45,000 actual, 17-18, the actual so far is about 5,000.
So that increased cost, was that due to the Gibson?
The increased cost was due to one of our engines. It lost a motor on the highway. So it was approximately $35,000, $30,000 in there to replace it.
Was that a Pierce?
It was. That was a Pierce with 24 years of service.
Okay.
Okay, so let's bring it back to the committee for discussion. We'll start with David.
I have a few comments. First off, I disagree with the statement in the staff report that Pierce is the only fire engine manufacturer that can service all of Morro Bay's needs without having more comparative technical data from other manufacturers. Without the additional comparative technical data, it's difficult to make an objective assessment of Pierce's merits over other manufacturers. Also, the staff report lacks cost comparison data to demonstrate that the price of the fire engine is fair and reasonable. And that kind of cost comparison data could even be prices paid by other agencies inside or outside of California for the same class of fire engine. How does the price that's being quoted by Pierce compare with other recent sales to other agencies? How do we know that price is fair and reasonable compared to those other types of sales? And I realize fire engines are custom built and they're all different, so it's kind of hard to compare apples to apples on something like that, but I would think there would be a base level price that could be used for comparison, and then any of the options or changes, additives to that cost could be factored in. So I think it'd be reasonable to see some kind of a cost comparison in the staff report to make sure that it is a reasonable price that Morro Bay is paying for this fire engine. And I also understand that the fire department and other city staff resources are limited and time challenged. Writing a bid specification for something as complex as a fire engine and running a bid process is difficult and time-consuming, and it's a lot easier to request sole source purchase awards. I see two main advantages for the sole source purchase from Pierce, and that is proximity to a service center and fleet uniformity. Fire apparatus is an infrequent, long-term, and high-value equipment purchase. I agree with staff that buying from a manufacturer with a high-quality product, a stable history, and deep financial resources is important and may outweigh any additional cost paid for the initial purchase over a 25-year life cycle. And having said all that, I'll agree to recommend the sole source award. But I would like to see some, it would be good to have some additional information for cost data for City Council.
Well, I would like to thank you for your work and for the time to pass on thanks to the chief for the time I was able to spend over there looking at what you have at the fire station. I found that to really give me a concrete background on this discussion. So just thank you for that.
Yeah, just like I say, what is our cost of funds, Jennifer? If we were going to, what's the cost of funds for annual costs?
So the recommendation is for a contract not to exceed $679. We're looking at other possible discounts we could take. I'm going to ask the company if we do it. We typically do a net 30 payment. If we do a net 14 or a net 10, is there another, incremental percentage that will come off of that? So we're going to check with Pierce on that if this is approved. And again, as they're building, but we wouldn't exceed $679, and that will be about $60,000 for the next 4 or 5 years from Measure Q.
Okay. Well, I was just like, how would we convert, maintenance annual maintenance cost to present value?
We could do a net present value calculation on, an average of those. You would expect it to be less since it's a newer engine, so maybe, closer to the $10,000 range, but they might have a better idea, and we could bring that back to you.
And then the other thing which hits, on this maintenance thing, if you're dealing with maintaining a truck for 20 years, and you're going to have maybe, because of the issues of access of $5,000 a year, times 20 is $100,000. So that would be a really easy way to help justify what your argument is.
Okay.
Well, the only comment I would make is that, the fire department, like the police department, is overwhelmingly personnel heavy as far as costs are concerned. 80-85% of total costs in those departments are personnel. And I think anything that makes life better, more efficient, more effective for you guys is money well spent. So I would recommend that the council approve this. So the recommendation from staff is that this committee recommend to the City Council to authorize the sole source purchase of an Aero XT 1500 gallon per minute fire engine pumper from Pierce Manufacturing in an amount not to exceed $679,000. And can I get a motion on that?
I second.
I'll move. I'll move to recommend.
And then I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, passes 6-0. Thank you. So this next item is a report, third quarter investment report. Jennifer?
Okay, thank you. This is another overdue report for the third quarter, and you should be receiving the fourth quarter report in August. We'll bring that forward. We're well above our liquidity ratio that we established back in February or March. We confirmed about a 65-70% target liquidity. We're 85%. Frankly, I haven't had time to go shopping for CDs. There's been some stuff going on, but then in hindsight, I'm kind of glad I did not. We had a very large check run for year-end and first of the year with all of our insurance premiums due, so that was about $3 million in total this past week. And then the next check run is going to be over $2 million since we're prepaying our PERS liabilities up front to save about $50,000 in interest. So the balances look quite high now. They're going to be dwindled down after July. But we do need to look at not keeping as much in the lower interest accounts and keeping more in LAIF because that's performing better. So we'll be more cognizant of that going forward. Also, when we were preparing budget, we had intended to use cash balance for the WARF project. But now we're looking at drawing down on that planning loan from SRF. They don't want it to be sitting out there unused. So we're going to draw that down, so that will require less cash on hand, liquid cash, so we can invest some of that money too.
Okay, any questions? We'll start on the left here. Bart, any questions? Walter?
Nothing.
Okay. A couple questions for you, Jennifer. So looking at your portfolio performance report here, the second account in the list is Rabobank Money Market, $2.5 million earning 0.2% interest. What is the purpose of that account?
My understanding is that, and this may not be completely accurate, but I understand that there was an intent to have multiple different accounts to spread the money among. So the sweep account is there if we overdraw on the daily one, it can, sweep over. And then there was a separate account, the money market account, that would earn a little bit more interest. Then we opened Opus Bank and Val. You might remember when. That wasn't long before I started, I don't think. because the balances were getting high enough that they wanted to have another bank involved in that, and that has a higher interest rate as well. Ideally, we don't need $2 million in the money market, $2.5 million, and then $4 million in the sweep. So we need to think about keeping a more a better distribution between LAIF and OPIS, which are the higher earning interest accounts. And it's easy enough to transfer between those if we're not going to purchase CDs.
Okay, so is the Rabobank sweep account, is that the checking account? Is that what you...
We have another checking account that doesn't keep a real balance in there. It's pretty minimal, 20-ish thousand.
So effectively, the sweep is the checking account. That's where the money comes from when you're paying bills.
Right. Okay.
And then down further down the page, government agency, you've got some, looks like Fannie Mae that matured on April 30th. What happened with that $500,000 when it matured?
It was deposited into our Rabobank, and I believe we transferred it to LAIF, but I can't quite remember.
Okay, all right. So is that kind of the approach you're going to take just for the near future
when
these other ones mature?
When that one matured, that intentionally, I didn't go CD shopping, if you will, because we were doing budget at the time and we were having the discussions about paying with cash on hand for the wharf project. And being a little leery, knowing that budget was $9 million and the timing of when those payments would come out, if the budget was adopted. Now that we have a better idea and have a plan that we'll be drawing from the SRF planning loan, I don't need to keep that aside. So I just needed to make sure we had the cash for the insurance premiums and the CalPERS payments. And those all go out in July. So we'll have a better cash flow need after that and be able to invest. I think we'll still, do 6 months or so in case we need to draw something for the wharf, but we should be fine with the planning loan.
Okay, thank you. And then, of course, with LAIF, you have same-day transfer capabilities.
So correct.
You're never going to really get stuck there. Well, those are all the questions I had. So, okay, Don, go ahead.
I just remembered this. Does the city ever take a perspective or a specific lens on investing in addition to thinking about how much money will be made? Like, some entities take kind of a lens on, we want to invest in clean energy, or we want to invest in, this particular kind of funds. Is there anything, or we don't want to invest into, tobacco kinds of, is there ever that kind of lens with investment?
I'm not recalling that our investment policy speaks to that. We have a very passive approach to our investments, and that's kind of defined in our investment policy, or it is defined in the investment policy. CalPERS does exactly what you're speaking about, where they've consciously chosen not to invest in tobacco and that kind of thing. We'd have to bring that forward, I think, as an amendment to our policy if that's something the city wanted to consider.
Well, Don, the government code is pretty limited in regards to what kind of investments the city can make. They're pretty much all fixed income type investments, so they wouldn't be making any kind of equity investments in any companies. That would not be allowed under the government code.
Right. There's some that I think we probably could have a conversation about, but again, it's the risk. And PERS is getting around it to some extent because they do make some socially conscious investments, if you will.
Well, PERS can invest in common stocks.
That's true.
So
that's true.
LAIF can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Just as a quick comment on that, as you now know, I'm part of Morro Coast Audubon, and that issue came up, and we talked to our investment advisor, and it's a very, very complicated issue because who is totally clean when you start getting into various portfolios? So it's not easy. If they're directed companies like tobacco companies, yeah, you can say, I don't want to do that. But in general, it's a nice concept, and we would have liked to have done that, but implementing it we found would be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think that John clarified, but just to kind of maybe be more direct about it, these are our investments are largely in money market instruments. I don't even know if we can invest in corporate bonds, so I don't think there really is the opportunity to invest in, to choose ecologically friendly investments or non-tobacco investments. It's all money market.
Okay, next item is the review of fiscal year 2017-18 third quarter budget performance and status report, March 31st, 2018. Jennifer?
So this report we talked about, I think, during our May meeting that it would be going to council in June, and we would provide it to you at your next meeting after the fact. This is the report that the discussion came up at council about amending your resolution and bylaws to include these coming to the committee prior to council. Again, because it's after the fact, there were several questions that came in, or a handful of questions that we provided responses to. Happy to answer any other questions. All of the recommended adjustments were made at council or approved by the council. But if there's anything specific on the detail, I'm happy to address those. And apologies again for coming after the fact, a matter of timing. We'll try to, and we'll be required to bring them to you in the future before they go to council.
Okay, any questions from the committee? Let's start over here. Bart? Walter? No? Okay. I just want to say some words of appreciation to Barbara for being so thorough in reading this and sending that email back and pointing out the few things that you needed to kind of clean up. And that's one of the things that, you know, is good, a good reason for this committee to see this before the city council does, because we can serve as kind of proofreaders for you in some ways and make sure that this document is as clean as possible before the city council gets it. And that would be a good thing for all of us. So appreciate her doing that. Okay, the next item is a report. It's an oral presentation and discussion of the OpenGov Transparency Portal. And Jennifer?
So thank you, and thanks to Val for helping out with this. She's going to kind of maneuver through the site up there, and hopefully you can see it, or if you'd like to kind of come around and get a better view, you can. This is not active or live yet on our website. We're doing some kind of final reviews. Yes, please do. Reviews and cleanup. We did a preliminary kind of illustration of this during the last council meeting, and we specifically were pointing to the WHRF report that's been produced, because there's been several questions that have come up on, you know, how can we track expenses related to the WHRF. And so we wanted to give the council and community a chance, thank you, gentlemen, a chance to see what this tool was going to do and see if it's going to meet the needs that we think it will. And then wanted to bring it to the committee, even though it's not live yet, do a little bit of an illustration, kind of hear some feedback and get some thoughts from you on deployment and training in the community, because we've spent a lot of time and money developing this and getting this going. Thanks to Val, because she's really taken the lead on this and worked with OpenGov quite extensively, so appreciate that. But we want it to be useful, and we want it to be the most effective that it can be in terms of providing the data. So the screen that Valerie is on right now is our WHRF project. This is a summary of expenses, and it's been broken down into kind of general operating expenses and then personnel. So you can, we've tracked it from inception to year end. We consider inception to be March of 2013 through what we've uploaded from 17-18 to the system. And when you click on the expense category, it will break down into the detail of what makes up expenses. So consulting services, program management, planning and permitting, all the variety of expenses. In the early years of the project, it looks like everything was pretty much categorized as consulting services. As we've progressed through this, we've been being more detailed about things, and we've had obviously more expenses. So you know, there's a government relations category, and that is the charges for the Ferguson Group. That's our lobbyist in D.C. that's helping us with some of the funding, grant support, miscellaneous, planning and permitting. And Val can hover over any of those. So, for instance, the project management gold bar there in 17-18, and you'll see the amounts and how much was specifically spent. Or she can pull it up separately. If she goes down below, there will be a summary table there, and that shows in each year how much was spent on project management. And you can see that there wasn't anything categorized as that in the previous years until 17-18. And then $677,000 has been charged again since we uploaded this. If she clicks on the vendor detail tab, that's when you're going to get the detail of, what vendor that was, and you can expand those columns out so you can read the full vendor. There's a description tab over on the far right that'll give a little bit more of a description to what that is, the check number, the amount, and this would hopefully help two people to narrow down expenses, and then if there's something specific that they wanted to see the actual invoice for, we could always pull that at City Hall. You can do a search as well. If we go back to the full 14 categories or whatever, Val, of expenses, if you were more interested in looking at just a specific vendor and you didn't know what they fell under vendor detail, you can sort by vendor as well, and that's pretty easy to do. You can do it a couple different ways, but you could hover over like the Ferguson Group, for example. You could just kind of hover over that, search for the Ferguson Group, and it'll pull up all of the invoices for that group. In this case, the descriptions aren't that interesting because they're each month our retainer fee, but for other things, the description might help you narrow down if you're looking for something specific as well. And again, you can kind of sort by year, you can sort by vendor, you can clear that out and go back, you can sort by category type. We need to add a component to this. This is purely expenditures. We need to add a component for the revenue so we can show the revenue coming in. It's been primarily from the sewer accumulation fund, with the exception of about $250,000 that was from the water fund. But should the 218 process be successful, we would have a surcharge. So we'll add a surcharge line item, and I will add water and sewer so you can actually see which funds they're coming into, or the revenue sources that are coming in to pay for the wharf, because that would be specific for the wharf. And then we'll have a rates charge line item as well. So we want it to be as clear and transparent as possible. That's the wharf one. There's an expense detail. Was that just the summary report, Val? That was the detail. Okay. So the same with the personnel line item. We broke that out separately. The wharf is, nobody is charged directly to the wharf project. Whenever, for instance, I'm working on something wharf related, I go in and charge my timesheet specifically for how many hours we spent on the wharf. So that all feeds through what we call labor cost applied. And you can see the detail of just those personnel expenses with labor cost implied and the benefits associated with that, again, for each fiscal year. If we go back, Val, to the other reports.
Does it show the individual names as well?
We don't have individual names on there, but that is something that we can include if that's of interest or helpful.
Well, so, to know who's charging the project.
Well, I guess we probably should hold questions till you're back up at your microphone. But so the question that came in was if the labor, the personnel side would have individual names on it. We don't have them on there now. It's a summary detail. We can include them as the project manager. Mr. Caceres doesn't approve timesheets. We're approving his invoices, but the city manager approves the timesheets for staff that are charging to the wharf project. It's been all kind of director level at this point. So,
would there be personal information involved? Do you want to put the names of the people charging to the project out there without any sort of filters or privacy?
One of the reasons that we didn't include it was to make sure we didn't have any issues with putting in terms of who charges and how much time, that's public record. We would have to make sure we filter out any social security number, that kind of thing, and we can work with OpenGov on doing that. I don't know that unless it's deemed overly useful for the other funds, if it's something specific for the wharf, it's probably not as big of a deal. Once we start looking at the general fund, for example, and making sure all the police detail is, you know, that should be confidential, is hidden, that might get more cumbersome.
Yeah, I know that when I used to audit charges to, you know, core projects, I would go down to the people and I'd actually go down and harass them when I thought they were improperly charging and stuff. But you don't, well, you know, there is some issues of, you know, how much do you want to put out there, because at some point the project manager or whoever's signing for that thing is going to have to take responsibility of that they're approved charges. There is a process where the department person approves those charges, right?
There is, because we do all of our timekeeping electronically. The city manager, the department heads sign off on the time cards for employees in their departments. City manager signs off on all the department directors, and I sign off on the city manager's independently, and I have rejected his and sent it back because I knew he was in a meeting with me on the wharf, for example, and it wasn't charged, or, you know, so we do have kind of independent sign off and approval for that.
Thank you.
Jennifer, will you be tracking the donations that people can make on their water bill now to go into that extra fund? Will that be tracked at all and available here to know how much is being collected in that?
By donations, are you referring to the utility discount program?
Well, yes. So the money that people can give, not the money that is going in from late fees, but like right now I could give extra, correct?
You could. So if we go probably to the annual report, Val, we can sort this by fund, and the utility discount program is a separate fund. So we could pull up just that fund. You could look at revenues, and you could see, I think there's a separate line item for donations, and you would be able to track how much that is. Looks like it's a little slow at the moment. It's Murphy's Law, whatever. So there's annual reports, there's a balance sheet report. I'm not sure if it froze out or just waiting for a signal there. All of them look very similar to that wharf report in terms of the level of detail that you can pull up. And then we can, on the wharf report, you saw that Val was able to click on like something that said summary of expenses or summary of personnel. So we can generate those and have it be a one-click button, so there's less maneuvering through for people. And we thought that would be helpful, at least in the larger funds and the ones of most interest, like the wharf project. So the general fund, we can set up some pre-established links so people won't have to maneuver through or learn to.
This looks fantastic. Jeff Heller should be excited, I hope. He's watching. On your summary for wharf, are allocated costs or your costs in the 14 or more category? I mean, because they're less value than the ones that you have listed. Is that where that would show up?
Val, I think if you go back to the wharf, I think the 14 or more was, if I'm remembering correctly, it's just, I think you can click on that and it can break it down.
I would guess it's a smaller item. That's why you get to some point.
Well, I think they run out of space, so if she clicks on that, it's going to open up the detail. Oh, does it not? Yeah, show more. So you can actually get down to all of those.
So is that where, like, IT allocations are going to show up?
Postage, yeah. Most of IT is charged through, actually, the WORF project, I don't believe, has a current IT allocation to it. But the smaller items, like the postage,
or HR.
Travel.
So you got HR support. That would be an allocation somehow coming in, some part of it, to WORF.
Yeah, so a lot of things like that, HR, for example, we have not charged specific HR time related to the WORF. That hasn't been to that level of detail tracked yet. It's been when public works director, project manager, for example, when we were all in the Blue Ribbon Committee meetings and giving information, we would charge that time to the WORF. Up until fairly recently, even the amount of time spent on gathering public records requests has not been charged to this project specifically. We are having to start doing that because it's been so much time at this point. That we thought it was appropriate and necessary to begin doing that. But prior to, you know, maybe spring of 17-18, that level of detail has not been charged to the project. It's just been absorbed within the general fund.
When you looked up the maintenance costs for the fire engines, was this through the OneGov website?
So this was through OpenGov. And if we maybe use Council Member Addis's question about the utility discount program, now that we're up and running again, Val's going to select the annual report, and then she's going to search or filter through it by fund. And this is listing all of our city funds. She's going to type in utility discount program. And she's getting a chart. You can see the green is the revenue, the red is the expense. So if she just clicks on revenues, she'll see what goes in there. And there's the pink is donations. It looks pink, I think. And she can hover over that and see what the amounts are and show you. I certainly can't read that, but it looks like less than $1,000. And I think if you scroll down, there's the individual amounts down at the bottom as well. And then she did something very similar to that for the vehicle replacement. She sorted by general fund, the line or account item of vehicle maintenance and repair, and then the fire department. So I guess we were interested, and we wanted to show this to you because we have spent a lot of time getting this uploaded. We didn't purchase the integration piece of it. It's not that expensive, less than $3,000 if I'm remembering correctly. We may come back and ask to do that just so that you get more real up-to-date information rather than us having to go in every month or two and upload it. If it's as valuable as we hope it is to the community, they'll want more real-time information. So we'll look at possibly doing that. But in terms of deployment and training, if there's any feedback from the committee on what would be helpful, we have an option to bring somebody from OpenGov here and do some training. Val is very familiar with it and has done a great job at learning the system. I fumble around a little bit more clunky, but I can get through it too. So we can try to do more in-house training at first and see how it goes. But any suggestions from the committee, if you see anything on here that you're not liking or you want more detail on, now would be a great time to hear that as well.
No, I can't see it well enough to. But as far as, is there a help function, and is it a detailed help function, or is it kind of?
There's a question section down in the left. Oh, and a how-to questions up there.
Is it something the public would be able to use to order to learn the system, or is it something that you're not going to want to have the public fingering around with it.
No, it's completely, once it's live, you can, because you can't change anything in our system, it's not connected, so you can finger around in there and do what you'd like. You know, you can, if you don't like the versions of the bar graphs, you can change it to pie charts. Some of them are not all that accommodating to that, but you can download it into Excel so you can do your own searches. There's a variety of things, and you can't mess it up, really. You know, I think it depends on learning style. I would probably go in here. It's fairly intuitive. You can click around and probably spend a few hours and really get pretty good at doing it, and every time you go in there, you're going to get better at it. But I don't know if that's really accommodating to our community. I feel like we might need some more one-on-one kind of initial training, but it's just my kind of gut instinct. I can't say that for sure.
So I think it's getting withdrawn. You're saying this is going to be made available to everybody?
Mm-hmm. There will be a link to this on the city's website.
Which is really what we've been asking for in terms of a more public-friendly budget. But when you say training, who are you speaking about? The general public, departments, boards? Because I see the training as being pushed out a little bit differently depending on what the target population for training is. And then I think there's things that you could do to minimize having to have one-on-one meetings, you know, over and over again, especially if you created those webcasts that we've kind of tossed around ideas about. On some of the just initial basic, how do you use this stuff? Or if the person came down from Oakland and was doing a training, maybe they have webcasts, especially if the help or the questions, you know, if that's all just kind of written information.
Mm-hmm. So initially when we purchased this, you know, back in the winter, was kind of thinking through that process and thinking, you know, like, one or two community workshops and giving people an opportunity to come in and hopefully have a better screen that you could see it better and see how to maneuver through. But I'm not sure if that's the best approach or not, or if that would be utilized.
Are there devices that people would actually be on? Like, are you thinking at the library with the Chromebooks that they have for loan?
We could look at the library. That's a good option, I think, so people could work through it together. I think that's what we're kind of hoping to get some guidance from the committee on what you think would be the most useful. We can put together some webcasts. I think that would be a good idea and could be helpful, and we can do that internally because those are easy enough to just set aside time.
One of the biggest things, you know, I, as a project manager for the Corps of Engineers, I had to learn their financial management system. And then I was also said, okay, you got to figure out who's charging to the project and who shouldn't. And so I figured out by myself. Sounds like this is much simpler than what I had to deal with. But I also understood the process, how the funds got into the, you know, into the system, which... not even 8% of the people I worked with had no clue and they didn't want to learn. So the questions kind of gets down to is how trained up does someone need to be to deal with finding the information there? Just talking to those firemen who are here, I'm sure they have no interest in really understanding to find out where the numbers are hidden in this thing there, even though it would have probably made their report four or five times better than what they ended up doing. But it's, you know, it's taking down the little pieces and putting it back together, and how did they get in there? And if you understand that, it's easy, but if you're dealing with the public, this what did we call it, transparency, which we're talking about, you know, if they don't understand how the system is set up to take money in, take money out, and put it in places, you'll need to have some sort of tutorial or something like that to explain how the thing is structured. So, you know, maybe one in 10, 5 in 100 would have the chops to take it apart and put it back together for everybody. But it's, you know, and I don't personally believe the public the public would rather have it handed it to them rather than have to learn how to do it themselves, which I don't have a lot of sympathy for that attitude, but I'm still thinking that, you know, how far do we want to go on this transparency? How much training needs to be available to the public? How much training are you going to give to your direct department heads and the people who have to put together budgets like these two firemen had to do?
Well, and that's, I would suggest thinking about a differentiated training, right? So there's some internal training, some external offerings. I would suggest, though, from an instructional perspective, it's that there's some hands-on component. It's very rare that people will learn from watching someone else click around on a screen. I think they're going to need to have it hands-on. I do think there's people in the public that would be interested, and I do think that there's people that will be able to handle the information in the general public. I would see internal training if you had to decide. Obviously, the internal training is going to be the most important. But if it's in the plans anyways to train the public, I would use some of the resources that we have out here and consider if there's any way to work with the school district, who also has one-to-one devices and has access to community groups and general public, to see if they, you know, were interested in the city coming in for presentational purposes.
We did think about, and I know there is some interest in several departments from a staff level of having access, and we will provide training internally, not just the department heads. We have limited number of licenses for our finance software, so not very many people within each department have access to it. So in some cases, it depends on if that person is there that day. If it's, you know, in the case of the fire department, I think it's the chief and the administrative assistant, and she's not full-time, so you know, you have to wait for somebody to be there if you have a question, if you're interested in that level of detail. This, everybody will be able to access. So we do plan to provide training internally for all of the staff, and there has been interest expressed at staff level to know, be able to use this. So I think we'll get some advantages and use out of it that way. We just want to make sure we get as much use from the community mm-hmm. as possible.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer? I'd just like to ask a question. Excuse me if it's been addressed in an earlier presentation, but you mentioned the cost of the integration package, and I'm wondering, does OpenGov offer a software as a service option so that, you know, you could either pay by the hours that you use it or you know, something along those lines, and it's kind of like a monthly charge? A number of software companies are going to that model, and I'm just wondering if OpenGov is either contemplating that or already offers it.
So this portal that they offer is, we have an annual renewal rate, and I think it was $8,000, if I remember. The integration is $2,000 or $3,000, $2,800. Fee that we pay, and then they can just, there's a firewall, but they can essentially pull the data down from our finance system, and then this software that they have that we've purchased, I think there's a little bit of an incremental charge, but you can do some pretty robust budgeting and other there's other uses for it should we want to do that or think that will be helpful in the future. I think that's at least a few years down the road, because people have to get comfortable with this platform first, and not sure if we would get benefit out of it or not. But they do have other components, if that's what you're...
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking in terms of, is that instead of making people buy software licenses, mm-hmm. and that kind of, you know, for much smaller cities and stuff might be you know, just an obstacle for them to adopting it. A lot of companies, instead of selling licenses, are actually selling, you know, a monthly subscription, basically, to their software service, you know, based on usage or whatever. And I'm just wondering if OpenGov is, you know, if you're aware that they may be contemplating something like that, because it can be more effective for a smaller organization such as ours.
So OpenGov is never going to have the capacity to replace our finance system. And that's what we have the licenses to, is our finance system. And I'm not aware that Tyler Technologies, who owns New World, has monthly subscriptions at this point.
I'm want to make sure I understand exactly what this is. Are there so many licenses for OpenGov to go against the Morro Bay financial data?
No, the our finance system that we do everything internally, we have licenses for, and this isn't the right number, but let's say 20 licenses. And those are, you know, everybody in finance has one, has access, and then there's one or two people in each department that has access, so they can get on and look at their budgets. All employees have access to the time card keeping module. OpenGov is completely separate from that. So right now there's no, they don't even talk to each other, our finance system and OpenGov. So one of the things Valerie's been doing is going into our finance system, downloading all of this data and sending it to OpenGov in a format that they can read. They've uploaded it, and we've gone through to kind of spot check and make sure it's gotten uploaded right. We've, you know, fixed some things. And then this is a purely web-based, OpenGov is purely web-based. Everybody in the city, resident, employee, anybody outside of the city, it will be a link to this portal on our website that you can go to and, you know, look up what you'd like to look up. Because it's not connected in any way or talk to our finance system, you can't do anything internally to our system. You can't change how we charge anything. You can't make any changes that way. But it's not license-based. It's we've purchased this portal.
I guess my suggestion is so that you don't get overwhelmed as you, as much as we want transparency, and I'm sure there are certain individuals in the city who are going to love to go through this and create a gajillion questions. That's, I guess, my concern on the flip side of that. I mean, it's very easy to start going through this and literally ask questions about every single dollar up that up there, and I think there needs to be some expectation or limitation on what people can expect to get. It's one thing to show them this information, but much of it leads to questions. And what are the intentions, and what have other cities done relative to this? So you do know how to manage what's there and to give the local managers, if you will, the ability to see, well, what's going to be there, and so they can anticipate what questions might get asked, and are they ready to take that on? I mean, maybe it's just going to be a big blip initially where everybody wants to go and ask a lot of questions, and then it'll taper off. Probably somewhat like that, I'm sure. But
So, you know, anybody can ask for public information, and we're required by law to provide that within a certain time frame. So, now, if this is going to make, you know, access to that and raise more questions, that might be the case. When we started uploading the AP check registers to our website, that really is providing the same information, just in a little bit of a different format. It's not as easily to, you know, easy to search, but it's still there. The community's been very respectful, and we haven't been overwhelmed with additional questions based on those. So I think you're right. Initially, it'll be utilized more, and it might have more questions. But as people become more familiar and comfortable with it, I think those might taper off.
I do agree with the suggestion, though, of front-loading department heads around what are some of the hot-button issues that other cities have faced when they put their, you know, when they open up their budget with this much accessibility. I'm absolutely a proponent of it, but I always think it's good to be ready. Mm-hmm. What can I just ask, though, for $3,000, are you really saving time to not have the integration? Like, is it worth the $3,000 that you save to not be able to integrate?
No, I think the $3,000 is worth it at this point. When we started in, it was February, January timeframe that we brought this forward, I was still really new. It was, I thought it would be a good learning process to go through this, and I think it has been. You know, you're not that you won't double check with integration, but there's more of a forced double checking there, and it was a great learning experience. I think now that we're comfortable with how it's set up, it makes sense to pay the $3,000 and do the integration to save that time from the staffing perspective.
Is there approval that you need, or you can just go purchase that? Or
we'll probably bring it forward when we do our first quarter budget adjustment. There's sufficient funds in the IT budget to pay for that, you know, from fund balance. So even if we purchased beforehand, we'd either give something up to buy it if the adjustment wasn't approved or ask for the adjustment at first quarter.
And then is the person you talked about coming up here for training, is there a cost to that?
We just started talking with them about that. I don't believe there is, but I'm not 100% certain on that.
When will we be able to get hands-on access to this? Or can we get it now?
We don't have it up yet. I'm thinking by early August we'd like to have it up and ready. We've got a few cleanup things. If we're in the WARF report, it's an annual report, and the things say June on it, so it indicates monthly instead of annually. We do want to bring in some of the revenues for that. So there's a few little cleanup things. I feel like I've been saying that for a while now, so I did want to show that it is almost there. It's very close to being there. And Val's done a lot of work on this, so I wanted her to be able to show what she's been doing for the last few months in getting this ready.
Yeah,
I don't think I could really comment on it until I could really get hands-on access and spend some time with it. So that's one reason why I'm asking the question.
Okay.
The platforms, PCs, Macs, iPads,
PCs and Macs, sometimes with iPads things show up a little differently, but I think it'll work fine on the iPad as well.
Tested or somebody's tested?
I've pulled it up on mine quickly, but I didn't maneuver through. I pulled it up to look at one thing, and it was one of the custom reports, so I could just click on it. I didn't do some of the detail work on vendors on my iPad.
Smartphones?
I haven't tried it on the smartphone.
I mean, it seems that OpenGov should have that kind of optimization, right, for smartphone and for...
Yeah, I suspect it does, but I haven't tried it to say that for sure.
What did you have specific questions on deployment?
No, just wanted to get thoughts, and I think that's a fair point. As soon as it's, we've talked to them about doing a soft deployment, even though it's not completely cleaned up yet, so maybe that we need to have that conversation and send a link out to the committee so you have a chance to work through it, and then we can get some feedback from you and maybe bring it back again in August for our meeting and have a discussion.
I just want to point out, what's up there right now is the current public view. No, that's true, but that's how it will look.
What I just said, Joe, is you don't have a login yet, so we log in and get this, and without the login, you won't have that. So it'll look the same once we do get a deployment and an open platform happening, but we did just have a conversation about doing that, so I think we can do some kind of soft deployment and just not really advertise it out there, but let you guys have a chance to look through it and maneuver through, and then have a conversation in August again.
And where on the website will it be?
I'll send a link to the committee. I have a couple things I owe you in terms of, I wrote down here.
But I mean the plan in terms of visibility on the website.
Oh, it will put
what's
some kind
of... the ultimate plan of how accessible it'll be?
We'll put a button on our front page. I'm not sure if it'll be across the banner at the top where it says agendas or if it'll be along the side banner, but somewhere pretty visible that's easy to access.
How does OpenGov show the budget?
Val's going to go to the annual report, and it'll show... We haven't uploaded the 18-19 budget yet, but... It would have a column that'll say 18-19. It would show adopted budget, I believe. Under the details, you can see where it says amended budget and then actuals for each year. So for 18-19, we'd have adopted, and then the actual through each month.
And it allowed you to go through all the detail available in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
What's
down to more specific line items than we gave you in the budget?
What sort of interest has City Council shared with you on OpenGov?
Other than during the city manager kind of updates at the last council meeting was the first time we did something kind of similar to this. It was much abbreviated, just a couple minutes. and we specifically focused on what we've done with the wharf, because that was a real customized report for us to develop, and wanted to have the community get a sense of what we've been referring to when we say you can track costs by vendor, by category, because that's a questions come up with that in pretty much every meeting, and we refer to this OpenGov, but since we hadn't talked about it since January, it's been this elusive kind of concept. So we wanted to give a visual as to what that was. So they haven't had a chance to really provide feedback on this yet.
Will OpenGov be translatable like the rest of the website, do you know? Have they commented on that?
I haven't asked, but I'll check on that.
Okay.
OpenGov stimulates a lot of conversation. That's good. David, you mentioned something that I want to pursue a little bit, that you don't feel comfortable making any kind of recommendations on this because you really haven't had a chance to use it or see it live. Is there a way for us to have access to it before our August 21st meeting and bring it back to this committee before you make it available to the public, so we can actually work with it a little bit and give you some more informed feedback?
So let me check with Lauren. Lauren is our customer service representative that we've been working with. Val and I have access because we log in via our email address and they set us up, and you all have city emails through CFAC. So if we can get a few more access points, we'll see if we can use your email address. I'll send you an email message and let you know either way, but you would get a message from OpenGov, create a password, and then have ability to go through there.
Okay. And so without having that direct connection, when you have to do the manual downloads, what's the timeliness of the information?
It would depend on how frequently we downloaded it. I think the last one that Val did was a few days before the last council meeting. We had gotten the WARF report all the way developed except for through 1718, so she sent the last section of that probably Friday before the last council meeting, whatever date that was.
So I'm just thinking that you're providing a quarterly budget performance report to the council. Would the data be uploaded more often than quarterly?
If it was integrated, it would be.
Well, if it's not integrated.
We had hoped to do monthly, but that's probably not realistic. It's not a terribly complicated process. We have to go through, download the reports in CSV, and send them over. But as you know, we're limited staff. So Val does it. We work around payroll weeks because she can't do it during payroll weeks for obvious reasons. And I think the integration would just make it much more efficient. Even if we were able to meet the same timeline and do it monthly. The time savings for
$3,000. Well, there is a risk to integration, too. I mean, besides the fact that not all firewalls are foolproof, and you've got to safeguard that general ledger data with your life. But besides that, there are corrections that have to be made periodically.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got live data available to the public and then you have to correct it, what they see the following month may conflict with what they saw before.
That's true.
So I would think that you would want to make sure that whatever data you put out in the public is 100% foolproof correct, so you don't have to have different numbers on different months.
Or you could have, or whenever you make a correction, you put it someplace where someone could see where it came from.
I think if you're going to stimulate questions from the public, that's the kind of thing that's really going to stimulate questions. And so you want to, that's why, for me personally, I would rather just do it with manual downloads. Input it on the time schedule that you determine to be the best for you to ensure that that data is 100% correct.
I think that's a valid point. I would just say that even if we do it monthly or every 2 months, there are some instances where we've found things after that and have still needed to do a correction. Limited, there's not as many probably, but if something got charged to the wrong account, for example, is what you're referring to.
Sure.
It may not get caught in that 1 month if it's one of the smaller funds that, we don't necessarily get a chance to scroll through each month as regularly as we do the general fund or something like that. So that's going to be a risk, I think, and always. But you're minimizing it for sure.
And then, of course, at year end, when you're waiting for all your accruals to get done,
right.
You really can't publish anything until you have, and that's not going to be done for probably 60 days or more.
That would be a constant one that would be changing if we were to do integration.
Or you just don't publish anything
until
you feel like you have all the numbers accounted for.
I guess it's a question of finding what that balance is when the, you know, the information is available versus how much you're willing to accept that it's going to fluctuate some, and I don't know where that sweet spot is.
Can you set your time frames for integration? Say we don't want a nightly integration, we want it weekly, we want it monthly. Does OpenGov offer that kind of?
I believe they do.
So
yes.
You could feasibly schedule your integration quarterly, have time to make sure you're as updated as you can be before they integrate.
I believe that was my recollection of the conversation when we were originally discussing it, was that we could set it. I did have a concern about the firewall, and I would have to do more research on that if we did decide to. I'm not ready to purchase it tomorrow, for sure.
I know what the Corps did was they, once the data was certified by, you know, the project manager and the financial analyst and the management person, it was there. I mean, it was available all the way up to Congress, and so. And if they had to make a correction, you know, it was there, and everybody up to Congress would get to see it. So it would be, you know, once the data is certified, how much do you trust that your department chiefs understand what they're saying when they certify payroll, when they certify contracts and expenses and stuff like that? Do they understand what they would be doing if we put this out there, and because, you know, there are people in the Corps who just freeze and they wouldn't do anything. It was like 9 months of us threatening to throw them out a window to get them to act.
We definitely, you know, go through a less formal process than there's an approval process, right, where we're signing off on. But I think if started to say you're certifying this, they might get a little uncomfortable as to.
Well, they should be a little uncomfortable.
Right. I guess I think that we're kind of going through this shift in philosophies with budgets.
We've noticed.
Yes. So the balance of, you know, you're signing this and this is what this means. And then sometimes we still find things, you know, so they signed it and thought it was something else, and you have to go back and correct it, and that happens, and that's always going to happen. You're going through and doing your best to approve time cards, and it's not until we get to year end that we think, oh, this person, I know they worked on this, and there was no time, you know, there, and why is that? And you start questioning that. So you just didn't pick up on it that week, and that's always going to be the case. People are people, and we're always going to have, you know, things to correct, and I do that as well. So for the most part, the department heads are and folks that are entering AP, they do a great job of coming over and asking questions if they don't understand something. We've tried to be very, you know, please come and ask us beforehand. It's easier to fix it rather now than have to go back after the fact. The department heads do a good job of reviewing their invoices as well, but everybody is, you know, it's a constant running train, right? So do the best we can with what we have.
Jennifer, is there a feature on OpenGov on the landing page where a text message could be applied? So when I click off the main menu, I get to the landing page of OpenGov, and I get a message from you saying, you know, year-end data will be posted on this date, you know, in order to, you know, reconcile year-end accruals and that kind of stuff, so that people aren't having kittens over the fact that it isn't available the day after the year end.
I'm going to look and see on there. I'm not sure that there, and maybe one thing we need to check with Lauren on is if there's a date on there of even when the last upload was, because that would be useful as well. I know you can submit questions via OpenGov and will come to us and we can respond to them. I don't know if we can proactively put a screenshot up, but we can check with her on that, because that could be helpful. Right.
Yeah, for announcements. Mm-hmm. Or welcome to OpenGov. Keep your questions to a minimum, please.
Okay, well, great conversation. Any other public comments? Excellent. Come on up to the microphone, please.
You have to bring cookies, though. Did you bring cookies?
My name is Cindy. I'm a resident here. And one of the things that I'd really like to see in there, is, and it might be already on your cleanup list, is consistency in nomenclature. Because when I go look on the city website, I see something about utility assistance program, mm-hmm. and what you just demoed for me was, I believe, something discount, water discount thing. So that may sound like a real picky thing, but for someone who's not real familiar with this stuff, consistency in naming can go a long way to help people navigate. I also, one of the questions I had, I don't see it here, is are there going to be documents uploaded and accessible through this as well? Or is that always going to be, you know, on the website separate?
So fair point on the nomenclature. We'll work to, it might be a work in progress because there's probably a lot of that, but I think that's a valid point. There are no actual documents uploaded to OpenGlobe. So if you were to sort through and look for a, you know, vendor specific, and you can narrow down what invoice you want, you could submit a request to get a copy of that invoice, and we would copy it and provide it. Right now we're not uploading any of our, we don't laserfish any of our invoices at this point.
Okay. Is there a module that eventually you might be able to do that, or?
I don't think OpenGov has that module. I believe there's capacity within our finance system to attach to, like, POs and that kind of thing, but we don't utilize it.
Okay. And then my last thing in comment on your training is, I think there's a lot of people who might benefit if someone at the library was trained. And so if you could engage maybe one of the librarians who could help people do real simple searches, I think the kind of folks that would go there would be looking for real, you know, probably simple high-level type searches. And I guess the last thing is I really like your idea about a quick link to things that you find to be popular. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Very constructive. Okay, any other comments or questions from the committee?
I'll just say thank you for bringing this to us. I think it alleviates a lot of the work that was going to be done around public-friendly budget. I think this really is the answer. I would like to see if the integration, if the firewall's good enough on the integration. I would rather staff spend time on other things besides manual uploads, especially if you can figure out the timing and the firewall piece of that integration. I'm interested to see it. I don't feel like I need to dig in and pick it apart before the August meeting to feel comfortable with a plan towards moving it forward. I think we need to, I would like to see the department heads know what some of the hot button issues have been for other cities when they go public with their budgets. And I would like to see, I'll just reiterate, hands-on training offered rather than just a presentation style training offered.
One thing I'd like to figure out is, you know, Jennifer and Val would deserve a commendation for putting this, and would that be something that we could do tonight, or was that something which we'd have to wait till it's actually in place and up and going?
Well, it's something you can certainly make a motion on. It's it would just be something that appears in our minutes. You want to do that?
I would like to move that we make a commendation for Jennifer, and I'm going to have to look at your name. Calloway and Valerie Webb.
I'll second that.
For the work they have put in to getting the OneGov site working, and from where this presentation, it is really an important thing for the city.
I'll second that, too.
Motion from John, second from Walter. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes. Thank you.
Thanks.
Walter, do you have any others? No? Okay. All right, very good. So this is something that is really revolutionary for the city. This is for when I think back of what the city was doing when I first became a citizen of the city and what the city's doing now, it is truly like night and day. It's amazing. Great, great progress.
I agree. I mean, when I was recruited to sit on this committee, the reasons they wanted me to do stuff there are going away because a lot of the stuff I know how to do is, you know, this auditing. It's not going to be near the issue it was when four years ago. Anyway, the cooperation is really impressive.
Absolutely.
If I can just add on, thank you for that. And I just want to acknowledge that obviously the last few months there's been a lot going on in the city with one very large project, and it's very time-consuming. And Val and the rest of the finance team and really, you know, the staff at the city can carry on with the day-to-day operations and give others the chance to work on these larger projects. And, you know, I feel completely comfortable that they've been able to do that. And it's been so incredibly helpful from my end to know that. So Val's done a great job with this, and really the whole department. Being such a new department with the city, I just can't, you know, be more proud of them. I say they're my sensational six. So the finance department's been just a blessing.
Agreed. Okay, so moving on. Future agenda items.
Okay, here's the list for August that I have right now. Fourth quarter investment report. I guess this would be a question if you would like a more detailed third quarter Measure Q report. In the past, we would provide you with there are credit card things, and we didn't do that because it was in the overall performance report that we provided to the council. If you'd like the more detailed transactions report for the third quarter, we can do that in August as well.
I'm thinking that you probably had no Measure Q expenditures in the fourth quarter.
Well, this would, I don't think we gave you detail for the third quarter other than this either. You know, in the past, if somebody had charged something on a credit card, you would get the credit card statement and the invoice. And since the third quarter kind of blended into June, we didn't do any of that for Measure Q specific. So we can do that for the third quarter, or we can wait until we do the year end and give you everything at once. That's up
to the committee. I think we're only supposed to review it twice a year.
Okay.
So at least that's what it says in our charter. So the June 30th numbers would be what we would be looking for.
So we won't have June 30th by August.
Yeah, and I know on the revenue side, you don't get the final sales tax revenue until like September.
Correct.
So that's going to have to wait. But on the expenditure side, I'd be very surprised if you had any expenditures in the fourth quarter because, I mean, pretty much everything was already done by March 31st. So that's something. I mean, if you can give us a clean expenditure listing as of June 30th for our August 21st meeting, that might be helpful. We can take a look at that. Or else it'll have to wait till September.
We'll keep that as tentative and see where we're at
okay. In
August. I'd plan to do kind of I think I mentioned this in the beginning, a budget brochure, if you will. That's a really high-level summary. I'm going to work off a template I developed for another city when I was there, and I'll bring that forward, and then that can maybe be a discussion point for somebody that's not comfortable working either online or to this level of detail. It'll be a broader kind of overview that we can have a conversation if that's helpful or not, or you can provide feedback into changes that you want to see with that. And I guess I think that's all I have on my list.
Will there be an update on this?
Oh, yeah, we'll
also
do an OpenGov.
Okay.
And prior to that, I won't be able to call today. We'll contact OpenGov tomorrow and see if we can get you all access, so those of you that are interested in going in and working through the system, you can do that. And if you want to submit stuff to me prior to our August meeting, we can try to make changes if it's something that seems like we don't need to have a discussion about. Otherwise, we can have a discussion in August.
Yeah, and I think if we try to use it ourselves, we may have a better idea of what kind of training is needed.
Well, training and editing, as you mentioned.
So the major queue expenditures would theoretically be visible if we had the access to OpenGov?
That's correct.
Okay.
Can I just, it doesn't have to be on August, but just again, some kind of update on the PO system. Is that all taken care of, or does that need to come back? And it doesn't have to be in August if that agenda's full, or if there's no update, but
so
I'm still interested in finding out what's happening there.
I'm very interested in that as well. I had actually hoped to have it up and ready for July 1 with the start of the fiscal year. That didn't happen, but I would say I'm 75% there. So I will keep that on there as a tentative thing as well, because I'd like to be able to come in August and say that it's up and going and this is how it's working. So we'll keep that tentatively. Same with some of the policies and procedures that we're updating. That was one of the audit findings as well from the auditors. The staff in the finance department, we've asked them all to get their kind of working handbooks, if you will, for their desks together. And all of the desks and functions right now have handbooks, and they've been updated with kind of screenshots and, you know, operated under this. If you were out and somebody had to sit at your desk, how would they maneuver through the day? So everybody's kind of done that process and updated those, so we'll be able to show the auditors those when they come. Part of that other, you know, piece of that recommendation was broader in general policies and procedures, and the auditors had indicated, you know, and I rightly so, that the PO system's a higher priority. So we're going to incrementally start working on those broader policies and bring those back as well for the council.
So are these handbooks, the desk handbooks you're talking about, is that something we can get copies of for ourselves? So if we want,
those are job specific though, John. I mean,
is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be, for instance, if you were coming in to fill one of the front counter jobs to take in receipts. This is what the screen looks like. Click on this button, it takes you here. This is what you enter. It's really meant for if we had an unknown absence or a long period of time, and somebody or a new employee come in, they could really operate pretty efficiently from working with that handbook. The financial policies as a broadband, that will be when we get those kind of compiled and together, that will be available online. Or at least to the committee for review.
Well, you've already done some of those.
Mm-hmm, that's
the
correct.
Investment policies, the debt policy.
The reserve policy.
Reserve policy, mm-hmm. Sure. So a lot of that's in place. Okay, so our next meeting is going to be on August 21st at 3:30. And unless there are any other comments, we can adjourn.
I have one final quick comment. Jennifer and I went back and forth on the budget adjustments issue. And I was concerned with budget adjustments. It would sort of mask how we did relative to the initial budget. So she's just going to leave a column that says original budget and an adjusted budget column, so you can still compare how we did relative to the initial budget. So you don't, it's like rescheduling, and you're always on schedule.
Yeah.
If you reallocate, well, you're going to get real close to the right answer at the end. So she agreed just to leave another column, which works perfectly for me.
And if you take a look at the CAFR, the annual report, you'll see that that's the way the budget comparison is done in the CAFR as well. They show the original budget, the amended budget, and then the actual. So that's good information to have.
Yeah, so we'll just model that when we do our quarterly updates so that it's all out there.
Okay, we stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.